Thus, the globe is nothing other than the material mirror of the spiritual world and the consciousness that characterizes humans. The so-called polar thinking of wrong and right, of good and evil, also arose on the basis of these fixed components of everyday life. Other energies have developed from these two basic principles, the archangel energies. However, you should not imagine them as winged beings, but rather as forms of energy that have the quality of a certain color. When depicting angels, the wings simply symbolize that they are spiritual, not material beings. The archangels are something like patrons who are responsible for entire groups of people and certain topics. This area was also eventually subdivided again. The level of simple angel beings emerged. If we stick with the representation of colors, we are dealing with a wide variety of mixed colors on this level. This is also the level at which the souls of ascended masters and highly developed spiritual helpers are located. As you can see from figure 2, the spiritual world ultimately extends from simple spiritual helpers to the level of the deceased and into the material creation itself. Matter is therefore the visible side of the divine primal principle. That is why it is also correct to say that everyone carries a part of God within themselves. With every fertilization of an egg cell, the Big Bang that also created the globe is repeated, and each time a new, small universe is created, a human being. God as a source. The ideas of God are very different and strongly depend on the corresponding culture and history of a people. However, if the divine primal principle is represented neutrally, many different images of God and beliefs can be found in it. For all religions in the world, God is the symbol of a purifying and power-giving source. However, since humans function in the form of inner images, the brain is always looking for an image for emotional states. In the case of God, this has led to the creation of a variety of symbolic representations that are intended to illustrate the role of this divine source depending on the cultural background. Many religions have an image of an authority, which unfortunately is not always conducive to a value-free image of God. A neutral image for this source of power would be, for example, a bright white light that has no particular shape. As soon as you connect with this light, the soul, which is also made of light, is returned to its original state. The light triggers a neutral state that feels like a cleansing for many people. The feeling of regaining one's purity and innocence, which is usually still natural in childhood, is made possible by a connection with this source. If you now imagine that God is an inexhaustible source of light, then you also understand that God cannot punish. After all, this would require a personified being that thinks and acts like humans do. You don't need a divine source to punish yourself, you can do it all on your own every day. Punishment is not in the Creator's spirit, but merely an attitude of the ego that prevents people from remembering their own divine and neutral state and being one with it. No drugs or other aids are necessary to achieve this state, on the contrary, they tend to distance you even further from your own center. Ultimately, you just need to allow yourself to think that every person carries this source of light within themselves and can access it at any time. Whether you let it shine within you and accept this gift is up to each individual. What actually stops people from living in this consciousness every day? Unfortunately, our parents play a large and formative role here. If you feel loved, noticed and recognized, it will not be difficult for you to feel this power within yourself and to use it for yourself. If your parents have taught you all of this, you will be able to accept love as an adult. And this unconditional love of your parents is very similar to the divine state. On the other hand, if you have experienced punishing, distant or even violent parents, you will develop the conviction in childhood that you are unlovable and inadequate. Such convictions make it difficult to accept this divine source and allow it to work. In this sense, you can imagine God as a good parent. He does not take important experiences away from people because he knows that they are enormously important for personal growth. After all, parents should not keep all suffering away from their children and wrap them in cotton wool, because that way they do not learn to master life and face its challenges. It is important that parents are there and comfort when the child has experienced suffering or pain, and that is precisely God's overriding task. You find comfort, and this belief gives you support, just as children should find it in their parents. Why does God allow so much suffering in this world? Many wars and crimes are fought in God's name. However, this is usually an abuse of this source to achieve one's own ends or goals. People who are actually connected to this divine power would never use God's name for their activities in order to give their intentions meaning, greatness or justification. Humble, authentically religious people do not constantly talk about their holy and good deeds. They simply act accordingly. However, humans have been given another gift at birth, free will. Everyone has it, but not many use it in the right way. Many people understand free will to mean, I do what I want. This is not fundamentally wrong, as long as it does not harm others. It is not God's plan to educate people by punishing them, but to confront them with the consequences of their actions, which are based on free will. The learning effect is much greater, as can also be seen in the upbringing of children. So God cannot prevent suffering in this world unless he abolishes human free will and ensures order himself. But what meaning and learning purpose would human existence have then? Again, someone would take over responsibility and leadership, and the human being would be a puppet and an executive organ, not one that thinks for itself. That would be convenient, but incredibly pointless to make such an effort for. The origin of the word religion once again clarifies the task that it was originally intended to have. The word means something like roots or reconnection. Roots provide support and are responsible and important for a firm footing. So if you make sure that the soul tree is well rooted and that you are down to earth, this enables a healthy, spiritual reconnection too. About the divine primal principle. A tree is a beautiful symbol for this. It can only grow as far towards the sky as it grows parallel to it downwards into the earth. The roots of a healthy tree are always the same size as its crown. At the beginning, however, a seed first develops roots for a firm footing. For spiritual and mental development, this means, one cannot fully develop spiritually as long as one has not accepted and learned to love material life in all its facets. The same principle underlies the mentally and physically healthy development of people. Religion should therefore help people to find support in themselves through faith. It should not create dependency or feelings of guilt, but bring God closer to people and vice versa. Religion should strengthen people and remind them of their own divine existence so that they can draw from this source for others and themselves at any time. Because then people would also be more sensitive and mindful in their dealings with themselves and others. Much suffering would not arise in the first place. Heaven or hell? This question concerns many people and is therefore by no means unusual. Our culture is generally uncertain when it comes to dealing with death. Death and dying are still topics that people don't like to talk about. But we will all be affected by them at some point. It is all the more illogical that it is not openly discussed. However, this was not always the case. The origin of this polarized thinking can be found in our religion, among other things. Unfortunately, the institution of the church at some point created an image of death in which a judgment day awaits us after our physical death. The image of heaven and hell was created, and words such as guilt and atonement were linked to it accordingly. As a result, people developed the idea of a punishing and judgmental God. In order to withstand the judgment day, you have to be a good person. But there were and still are very contradictory statements about what exactly makes a good person. The answer was and is very dependent on the respective advisor or judge. There was no certain information about which actions would definitely take you to heaven and which to hell. Fear arose from this uncertainty. Unfortunately, many people have taken advantage of this culture of fear to manipulate others. Because people who are afraid are easier to steer in the desired direction, the possibility of exercising power is much easier with anxious and insecure people than with those who are not afraid of death. For them, Death does not represent any threat and therefore cannot be used as a means of pressure. This manipulative principle naturally works in the other direction too. If an overly glorious picture of life after death is created and rewards are promised, people are again easily influenced and do not really perceive the opportunity of earthly life. This is evident, for example, in suicide bombers who are not afraid of death but also have no respect for life. They serve someone else's idea in the hope of reward in the afterlife. But this calculation does not work either, because such people also have to face the consequences of their actions after their death and look back on their lives. It is therefore important and necessary for many reasons to create a neutral picture of existence after death. Only this makes us free people who are able to take responsibility for our own actions. Jesus already set an example of love, respect and responsibility for people. There was no mention of punishment, guilt or retribution. He wanted to show us that punishment is a human construct and not in the Creator's interest. One more personal comment. I would like to make it clear that I am not an opponent of the church or religion. Faith and a corresponding community with which one can share the same attitude is extremely important, especially today. For me, however, a religious community becomes unhealthy when it harms others or when the free will of the individual no longer has a place. Angels and spiritual helpers. It is important to understand the connection between angels and the spiritual world and what their specific tasks are so that one can use and understand their support in everyday life. There are various areas in the angelic realm to which they are assigned. This provides information about their areas of responsibility and possible uses. If one starts from the top of the hierarchy, the archangels would be the next ones to be mentioned after God, the Christ and the Luciferic principle. See Figure 2, p. 99. They are also called the Magnificent Seven. They include Archangel Michael, Archangel Jophiel, Archangel Chamuel, Archangel Gabriel, Archangel Raphael, Archangel Uriel and Archangel Zadkiel. Each of them is assigned a specific color, which also provides information about the archangel's area of operation. The following table briefly summarizes the names, color assignments and respective areas of responsibility. You can imagine the sensible use of angel energies as follows. If, for example, you have problems setting boundaries in a healthy way, you should ask Archangel Michael for help, but not in the sense that he takes the task away from you, but that he helps you to learn the ability to set boundaries yourself. That would make sense in that this learning process empowers people themselves and does not make them dependent. It also corresponds to the optimal way angels work. The archangels are responsible for an entire group of people, as their energy form allows it and is large enough to divide themselves accordingly. And yet you can ask each and every one of them for help. An archangel cannot therefore be the spiritual helper of a single person, as he is, so to speak, the patron of an entire group of people. Unlike the archangels, every person is his own spiritual guide, behind whom there is another group of helpers. This guide and his group are exclusively responsible for a single person. Some also call the spiritual guide the higher self. You can also imagine this group of helpers as follows. Suppose you came from a noble family. Accordingly, you yourself would be the nobleman. Your spiritual guide would be comparable to the head butler, who is well informed about everything and yet always stays discreetly in the background. The group of helpers would symbolically consist of a gardener, cook, nanny, tutor, etc. However, this group of helpers is delegated by the head butler. This means that it is completely sufficient to just turn to the spiritual guide, as he guides the others and is always informed about everything that concerns the person. This spiritual guide is at the side of his protege from the beginning to the end of life, regardless of whether he is perceived, consciously used or not. That is why it is sensible to build a relationship with this being so that he is not only used in an emergency, but the entire quality of life can be improved through this connection. The members of the helper group do not have the same presence as the spiritual guide. They are always used when their special skills are needed. New helpers can also join, and others say goodbye after a certain time. The spiritual guide, however, remains the same for life. In this context, it is important to mention that deceased relatives cannot be spiritual guides or helpers. They are too entangled in the history of the person in question and are therefore no longer neutral. Nevertheless, they can help and support their loved ones from the afterlife, but not in the spirit of the spiritual helper. Figure 4 shows the arrangement of personal, spiritual support again schematically. The next question is, of course, what do these spiritual beings look like? They do not have a physical appearance like humans, but exist in the form of a light body. This body is flexible and moves as quickly as light. But once you have a human representation in your mind's eye after you have made mental contact with your spiritual helper, this only serves to understand what personality is hidden behind the helper. The spiritual helpers create a picture in your head so that you can imagine what qualities and strengths they have. Their area of responsibility extends much further than just helping you find parking spaces or lost objects. Of course, you can ask for such functional things to make your everyday life easier, but it would be a shame to limit yourself to that. The real strengths of your companions lie elsewhere. Spiritual guides and helpers are there to advise you. However, they do not make decisions for you. You have to do that yourself, but they support you in making the right decisions by pronouncing recommendations or pointing out possible complications, for example in the form of signs. The helpers know your human life plan and also have the task of guiding you back on the right path if you have strayed too far from it. For some spiritual companions, it is easier than for others, because people can be stubborn and obstinate to varying degrees, and the means they use are correspondingly different. If they are not given any specific tasks, or if you express specific wishes too rarely, the helpers simply carry out a kind of emergency program. They then try to keep the damage that the person causes through their actions as low as possible. The helpers then still serve the person, but more in the sense of damage limitation. If, on the other hand, you use the helper sensibly, you ask him, or her, for help in specific situations. Because these spiritual beings only increase their efforts if you ask them to. The reason for this is quite simply that they respect the free will of the person. As long as you do not ask for help and express wishes, they hold back discreetly. They respect the person's decision that they want to do it alone. Whether this is always so easy for them is another question. So you shouldn't limit your wishes to material things, but rather ask that the spiritual helpers support you in difficult and emotional matters. For example, if you have family problems, you could ask that the situation be resolved and improved for the benefit of everyone involved. Or that the guide or helper gives you the decisive impulse as to what is the most sensible thing to do in the situation. But be careful with what you wish for, it could come true. And so the question arises as to how these helpers actually work in everyday life and how you can perceive them. It's just like with angels. They don't appear before us with trumpets and fanfares announcing important messages. All of these spiritual energies are very unobtrusive and discreet. They don't serve through well-staged appearances so that people know, "Oh, I've seen an angel or spiritual helper," but rather they carry out their task humbly from the background. Which is also much more effective, by the way, because such superfluous stagings would cost far too much energy. Such performances are saved for emergencies. Spiritual helpers work in the following way. If the person is not too stressed and distracted from themselves, they give an impulse for an action or an idea at the right moment that helps to solve a situation. Now you might think that these inspirations arise from your own thinking, but there is a noticeable difference between a so-called inspiration and self-constructed ideas. The constructed thought is much more strenuous and takes place in the head. The inspiration or brainwave comes spontaneously and suddenly from outside and costs almost no energy. You only have to pay conscious attention to it once and you will feel the difference. Sometimes the helpers also work through the person's emotional world, But this type of connection requires that the person in question is aware of their emotions and knows their own emotional world well. Otherwise, confusion can quickly arise. Angels and spiritual helpers sometimes work by simply sending another person who then helps to solve the problem that you are facing and contributes crucial ideas. They do not have to put themselves on the map to do their work, because as neutral, spiritual beings they are freed from this kind of motivation. It is the person who is looking for confirmation and would put themselves on the map with such opportunities. These helpers rule by serving, and their main task is to support and accompany people in their personal and spiritual growth. Nothing more, but also nothing less. Of course, I also have a spiritual guide and a group of helpers. I have felt him by my side since childhood and have steadily improved contact and communication with him over time because it was an inner need of mine. His name is Michael, and if he were made of flesh and blood, he would keep women on their toes, because he has incredible charm, but is still very direct and extremely funny. He never loses sight of the essential things, is bursting with love for people and creation, and is therefore perfect for my work. For a long time I simply called him my dear spiritual helper, which worked very well. The correct term would be spiritual guide, but that word never suited him for me. These helpers don't attach any particular importance to names anyway, only humans do that. Pseudonyms or nicknames are also sufficient, with which you can address your helper without any problem, because he has long since known that he is meant. My helper has already created many a masterpiece by. I had to do a lot of work to unravel situations that I had created myself through too much activism, but fortunately he has not complained about me yet, which I find surprising when I look back. Because in some situations I do hold my head in my hands afterwards and am briefly annoyed that I did not listen to my first impulse. But these missteps are part of being human, and they are precisely the ones that help me develop the fastest, and my helper knows that too. I am infinitely grateful to have him by my side and am already looking forward to the moment we meet when I will travel back to the spiritual world. Spiritual world habitat. For many people, the spiritual world is still difficult to imagine, but that is quite understandable, since the human brain has difficulty visualizing images from certain dimensions onwards. However, the brain is also constantly developing in terms of multi-dimensional imagination. A good example of this is the image that people had of our Earth until recently. For a long time, people believed that the Earth was flat. With growing awareness and appropriate measuring devices, it finally became possible to see that the world is more like a sphere. As a result, people and their imagination developed further, and it was discovered that there is a universe with a specific arrangement. We now know that there are many such universes, and this is not the last dimension that people will conquer. The same is true of the spiritual world as it is of the Earth. It is multi-dimensional, and there are different levels of consciousness there. Just as on Earth, different conditions prevail on these spiritual levels of consciousness, each of which offers different opportunities for development. Step by step and from life to life, the human soul grows. This constantly growing awareness also creates new bases for action and is thus the basis for continuous development and change of people, but also of their habitat. How can one imagine the spiritual, disembodied existence in the spiritual world? The soul structure, like everything else, consists of light and energy. You can imagine a soul like our Earth as a sphere, made only of light. These spheres have different internal structures or sizes depending on their consciousness. Some have grid-like patterns and others have flower-like arrangements. The colors are also very different and each soul has its own rhythm. Some sensitive people can perceive this individual rhythm or even recognize the soul structure. Communication is telepathic. This is easiest to imagine if you take electricity and how it works as an example. One soul, sphere, sends out information in the form of an electrical impulse and the other receives it and converts it back into information. Through the exchange of information, souls can feed themselves with new knowledge and apply and use it in the next, earthly life. Through the sensory experience and application of this knowledge in earthly life, it becomes lived certainty and felt knowledge. The spiritual world is therefore the name given to this entire spiritual structure with all its levels and forms of consciousness. The afterlife, on the other hand, is merely one level of the spiritual world, the one into which our soul goes when our body has stopped living. Free will is the basis of life. Free will offers people an important basis for their development. It empowers them to make their own decisions and thus create many things. It is not for nothing that God has given us creativity in addition to free will. But this creative power can only develop in spiritual freedom. A good example of this is painting. If you are given a concrete template of what you want to paint, you already know in advance what the result will look like. If, on the other hand, you have room for your own creativity, you create a unique picture with a strong charisma and the basis for developing new ideas is provided. It is the same with the development of people and their consciousness. If God were to take away people's power to decide their own actions, human curiosity, creativity and existence would be completely pointless. People would not be able to learn what it means to take responsibility if God were to take away their free will. For many, this is certainly a comfortable and pleasant idea, but it would certainly not be in the spirit of evolution. The amazing thing is that the Creator has faith in there. Despite all the mistakes people have made, they still haven't lost their faith. And as long as God believes that people can still learn respect, consideration and love, people should hold on to this belief and do everything they can to achieve these goals. It's actually like raising children. Parents don't lose faith in their children's abilities at the first mishap, but try to teach them how they could do better in the future so that they can grow up to be self-responsible and strong people. Parents invest energy, and if necessary tolerance, just as God does with people. This free will can be used to contribute to the positive development of humanity. You can start right now and start with yourself. Of course, you can continue to use excuses so that you don't have to act responsibly. After all, it's very convenient to blame others for what's not going well in your own life. Some people even blame the Creator when there's no one else to blame. The only catch is that nothing can move or change as long as you hand over responsibility to others. But of course it is up to each individual how they handle it. Since everyone has been given the gift of free will, it is also their decision what they do with it or not. It always makes sense to use this gift constructively, even if you will always make mistakes when faced with this challenge. But that is not tragic. The only important thing is that you try and always do your best. You can't do more than that anyway. The principle of cause and effect. You often hear about this principle, but usually in a misunderstood context. The sentence, "Everything you send out comes back to you," many times overtakes on the flavor of guilt in the wrong context. If you replace the word guilt with the word responsibility, however, it sounds better and allows for reflection. Guilt feels like a sticky mass that you can't get rid of. Not even deep regret can save you. How should one deal with feelings of guilt until God forgives the sin? Responsibility, on the other hand, is no less serious, but it allows the possibility of recognizing mistakes, forgiving oneself and doing better next time. Of course, it is up to each person to decide how they want to handle this. The principle of cause and effect can also be found in physics, as Einstein so beautifully explained. Every energy that is moved or sent out has an effect somewhere. It is only a matter of time before the effects find their way back to the sender. The basis for this is the principle of balance. Everything in this world, whether material or spiritual, seeks balance, which in turn has to do with the earthly principle of polarity. An imbalance can exist for a certain period of time, but the attraction of the middle is stronger. So it is only a matter of time before balance is restored naturally. This can be observed again and again both in the development of the earth and in historical events. If a system has become too one-sided and unhealthy for people, it will eventually be destroyed so that it can then rearrange itself. This destruction can be brought about by social unrest, natural disasters or other events. The underlying principle can be illustrated very clearly as a scale. In this respect, there is such a thing as justice. The only question is when it will happen. Many people have lost faith in a fair balance because they often do not receive direct satisfaction.